This is Wake Up Call.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On the Sports Map Radio Network.
All right. Let's do this.
Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right. Thanks for joining us as we continue with Wake Up Call on Sports Map Radio. A lot to get to. A lot of different sports to get to. Tennessee last night upset number one Alabama. That made people in Knoxville feel really, really good. I told you about Marquette yesterday. I'm really high on the Golden Eagles for some weird reason. I have no idea why. I'm just in the Marquette this season. They beat Xavier last night and now lead the Big East, which is one of my favorite conferences in college basketball. I'm an old Big East guy. I loved Big East Mondays when I was younger. I just thought the whole conference was cool. I had all these weird personality coaches, Lou Carnesecca, John Thompson, Jim Boeheim, Jim Calhoun, Raleigh Massimino. I might be missing a few, but it was a fun conference back then, and it was even better. Villanova, especially when they won 1995. But you know what? Villanova and Duke are two teams this season that have shown that sometimes when a legend leaves, a lot of the legendary aspects of what they do goes away. Villanova is not the same team without Jay Wright, and Duke under John Shire is not the same team than Mike Krzyzewski had. Now, you can make the argument that you are going to suffer a little bit. You do commit to the coach rather than the organization or the team, I should say, school. And, yeah, you're going to lose a few people when they're not – you know, if you're a young person and you grew up under the shadow of Duke, let's say, of just Duke dominating college basketball, and you kind of want to be a part of that, maybe John Shire is a guy that doesn't matter who's the head coach. You just want to play at Cameron, right? There's an electricity at Cameron. You want to play at Cameron. And if Coach K is gone, Coach K is gone. It doesn't matter. You get to put on a Duke uniform. But some players know that, look, I wanted to play for the guy. I wanted to play for the man. So Jay Wright, Mike Krzyzewski, you just leave the cupboard a little bit bare when you leave. It's an interesting situation because there are schools that doesn't matter who the coach is going to be. They demand sort of a level of excellence. If John Calipari and Kentucky part ways at any point, Kentucky's going to expect whoever comes in that there's no let's learn on the job. There's going to be somebody that's going to come in and go, no, we're going to continue trying to get this team into the Final Four every single year. So it's been a little disappointing for two kind of juggernauts of college basketball, but overall, it's been a good, interesting season of college hoops. I want to get to the NBA, and I want to get Ron. I want to get your thoughts on this because you're a Lakers fan. There is a new look Lakers. If you want to go down that road, you can say it. Okay, they got rid of Russell Westbrook. That road. There's a new look
that
Lakers.
I'm not really happy.
D'Angelo Russell is in. Last night they beat the New Orleans Pelicans. Okay, they beat New Orleans and they did so pretty convincingly. And are we attracted? And because the media and all these people wanted to make comments on Twitter last night and even segments on morning TV shows about the Lakers and their viability of becoming a playoff team. So right now they're on the outside looking in of the 10 teams in the Western Conference that will have some sort of level of postseason play. Right now they are 14 games back, and they are 2 games back of Oklahoma City.
Number 10,
for that
right?
Final 10 spot.
Yeah.
So they're 14 games behind Denver at the top and 2 games behind Oklahoma City. So there's a viability there. Quickly amount of time, you can jump into that pool. You can get in there. Portland and Utah are ahead of them. Now, is this a Lakers thing or is it a LeBron thing? Is it LeBron James and our focus on him? Or is it because this is one of the iconic sports franchises that we have in America that is on the outside of a 10-team postseason that can't seem to get into that party right now?
Now, honestly, I think it's a little bit of both. I think it is, you know, it is a Lakers thing because, you know, just feels... Lakers aren't in the playoffs. Do the playoffs even count type of thing?
Because, right.
You know, because of the history behind the team, you know, you're used to seeing the purple and gold in the playoffs year after year after year. You know, they had that little slide like in the mid-90s. And then, you know, the Shaq and Kobe era took it over and, you know, brought them back up to prominence. And I do think it's a LeBron thing because we got so used to seeing him. And now... I don't think anything could tarnish his legacy, okay?
No.
Now, I'm saying this. Nothing could tarnish his legacy, but it is slowly becoming an eye-opener that isn't as, I mean, I know he's older, but he isn't seeing that much success in the West.
Yeah, it's very, and listen, it goes back to something people have always said. Like, it's very hard to go, everybody get on my back, I'll take you to where you got to go. The NBA is, it's just not that. It's, you know, LeBron's done it, Michael did it. There's only so far you can go when you're a one-man show. But Anthony Davis is now, D'Angelo Russell has been added. Dennis Schroeder will give you a couple of good minutes every single night. There is some pieces around him. People are really optimistic about where this team could go. And listen, I think you're right. I think it's a little bit of both. I think when you're talking about the Lakers, you know, the Lakers are an organization. They just don't disappear for very long.
No. Right?
They've always found a way to get back into prominence.
And yet they're not – we shouldn't be looking at them as a laughingstock. And I think that's kind of how, like, the rest of the country, the rest of the NBA is looking at the Lakers as almost like a laughingstock. Like, you know, it's just – it's LeBron and a – you know, a bunch of injured people all the time.
Yeah, there's always people in and out of the lineup,
he's
right?
Including
James.
Yeah, he's bringing in older stars who can't perform. I mean, finally, you know, it feels like, you know, we're getting younger and, you know, the right moves are being made. But for whatever reason, I mean, he just has not been able to build anything there. And it's getting to a point where it's like nobody wants to go and play for the Lakers.
Yeah, that's the other thing, right? So it's got to be so tough. You're Steve Ballmer. You're trying to build something and you can't because people would rather complain.
Yeah. I saw an article today or what the heck's his name?
Paul George.
Thank you. I'm blanking on his name. Paul George said that a ring for the Clippers would mean more in L.A. than for the Lakers. And he might be right.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, I mean, it would be the first. It'd be huge. I still say there's more Laker fans than Clipper fans, but I think there's an impact to the NBA that I think if the Clippers won, it would matter more than the Lakers.
The Clippers are really interesting because they are a couple of games above 500, right? But there's a little devil in the details when it comes to their record because right now they are 32-28, so they're four games above 500, right? But the devil in the detail is this. When Kawhi Leonard is on the court, they win games. When he's not on the court, they don't. They're 22-11 when he plays. So he missed all of last season with that ACL injury, and he's been working his way back rather slowly. And the Clippers are playing the long game here because they don't put him in back-to-back games. Then he had a setback with a knee, and he was out for a while. And, you know, so they're really, really cautious. I mean, listen, if Kawhi Leonard sneezes, there's a very good chance he's not playing that night. That's the way they're looking at this season. They are really careful because they remember when he did, before he tore his ACL in the playoffs of 2021, he was a dominating player in the playoffs. And so they remember how good he was in the postseason. Now he's playing really well. He's playing really well. He does, again, he takes a night off or two, but his stretch of games that he plays, he's been outstanding. And that's, so they're really interesting. They're a little under the radar because of that. And I think that when you get, so here's the thing. You've got a Clippers team in Los Angeles that, again, when Kawhi plays, they're one of the best teams in the NBA. However, you've also got a city where the Lakers are dominating so much, they can't even get traction on any success that they're building. But Ballmer, remember we did the story on Ballmer wanting to build his own arena? What was that story when he was trying to build his own place? It was the Great Western Forum, he was buying that or something? Ballmer is trying to get out of a shadow with the Lakers. He's trying to do something that is really, really hard to do because he doesn't have legacy and he doesn't have heritage built into his franchise, right? We've discussed this problem with the Clippers for a while. You go into cities that have two sports franchises, you can always find a reason why a group of those citizens like this team and don't like the other team, right? The Mets were a collection of Giants and Dodger fans when those two teams left. There are Mets fans who hate the Yankees, hate them. I know. I'm related to a bunch of them. There are Cubs fans who don't like the White Sox, and the White Sox don't root for the Cubs because the city is north side, south side. The Clippers can't penetrate that. They don't play in Anaheim, which is, it could be separated a little bit. They play in the same arena, for crying out loud. When you want to talk about ugly stepsister, to use that fairy tale analogy, they're it. They're it. And so now you're Steve Ballmer and you buy this team for $2 billion, right? You're in Los Angeles, so your market value is tremendous. People said, oh, you should move them here or there. Yeah, it's very difficult to move out of L.A. Even if you're a second fiddle in L.A., it still could be better than a lot of other cities. Better than Sacramento, right? You could move, like, you could put a team in, I don't know, you could put a team in Nashville and lose value.
Right.
Even if you're the second team in L.A., right? So he's never going to be able to take.
He's never going to be top dog.
He's never going to be top dog. Because of what we were talking about earlier with the XFL, right? How do you get people passionate about the XFL? You got to build it over time. But when you have a fan base that is not apathetic to the Lakers' plight, they're not jumping on board. They're bleeding, you know, purple and gold.
Yeah.
They can't break away from that just because the other team in the city might actually be good this postseason.
No, in fact, and you will see L.A. fans, they will celebrate. If the Clippers went on this magical run and happened to win the whole thing.
Yeah.
L.A. will celebrate them.
Sure they will.
You know, but the turnout just not going to be as great.
Right. And it's not going to feel, there's not going to be a level like it is when the Lakers win a title.
The one good thing the Clippers have for them is that L.A. does have fair weather fans.
Yeah, it's true, right? That's true. Very, very good point. All right, we're rolling along this morning. Good, the Bad, and the Dumb is coming up next. It is a Throwback Thursday on Twitter at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver. That's Ron with two N's as we continue with the Wake Up Call.
Wake Up Call continues now on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Time for the good.
That's really nice.
The bad.
That's the bad guy.
And the dumb.
What an idiot. Oh, what a loser.
All right, good, the bad, and the dumb. Love it. I'm so excited to Throwback Thursday for 1997. Jeff Gordon winning the Daytona 500 was good, but not as good as the good of the day.
Charities,
okay.
Charities are what are good of the day. They're good every day.
Right.
You know, we should just highlight that real quick. That, you know, never a bad day for a charity. But whenever you have a couple stories about charities, you got to mention them. So the Chiefs, the fans of the Chiefs have raised nearly $70,000 for Jason Kelce's charity.
Oh, that's very cool.
As a way for them to thank the Eagles for a great Super Bowl.
That's good. That's awesome.
So basically what they did is they set up a post and said, hey, what's the price? It was like $11, $13 or something like that, $14, because it was 6.2 plus 8.7.
There you go. 15?
What is it? They're about $15.
Yeah.
You know, call it $15. Because 62, Jason Kelce's number, 87, Travis Kelce's number. So
that's awesome. Good for them. That's great.
So they've raised about $70,000. Jason Kelce had a goal of reaching $100,000. He was currently just below 10. When he started this drive back in October. So
this is a really good way to go for fans, right?
Right. Much better than the other way we talked about yesterday where somebody sent the Valentine's Day card.
Yeah, right. Exactly. No, your fan base is rallying around something like, hey, look, we just won this, or we noticed this about your team, or you helped us in whatever way.
And you provided a good game. I mean, that game was... Yeah. It was a good Super Bowl.
It was fantastic. It was absolutely fantastic. And that's great. That's great. And the Kelces were the center of the sort of the football world for a bit with their mom there and everything else. And that's awesome. That's good. And we saw it with DeMar Hamlin. We saw it with the Bills when they, what was it,
Andy
Dalton's charity.
Seahawks.
That's right.
Did the same for the Detroit Lions this year.
So that's really cool when the fan bases are like, you know what? We see you over there. And we're going to support you, and we're gonna raise money for you. Yeah. We're going to help you out. That's awesome.
The other charity that we got to highlight is, I don't know if you've heard of this guy, former Bulls player Michael Jordan.
Yes.
He is.
I think I remember him.
You think you remember him, yeah.
I do.
He is set to, he's set to make another record, basically.
Is he?
He will. He is donating $10 million to the Make-A-Wish Foundation, where he will become, it'll be the largest single donation or single person to make a donation to that foundation.
And I took that personally.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Somebody said my my charity giving of $8 million was a little low, and I took that personally. So I made it 10.
Yep.
Good for him.
I wonder if Isaiah went, like, I'm going to do 11.
Yeah. If Isaiah went, I'm going to do 11. And Jordan's like, well, I was very offended by that.
Yeah.
Decided to make it 10. Good. Well, that's awesome. Good for him. That's great. That's great. Jordan just turned 60 yesterday, I think it was.
Yeah. 60 so that's what he's doing for his 60th birthday is donating $10 million to make a wish.
That's awesome. Amazing. Michael Jordan's 60.
Yeah,
that's
no.
great. That's great. Some people, man, you just can't stop. That I saw the trailer again for Air, and I am now really fascinated.
I am too.
When I watched it during the Super Bowl, I was kind of like, okay, that's interesting. Yeah. And then I was watching a YouTube clip, and it popped on as like it was one of those ads where you could click out of the ad,
right? And you didn't.
And I didn't. I said, you know what?
I did the same thing.
I didn't really watch this as closely as I should have when it came on during the Super Bowl. Let me watch this again. And it really, really looks fascinating.
It has my curiosity.
Me too. Me too. You know, I don't know if I'll go in the theater to see it.
No.
But I definitely will see it when it comes out on whatever streaming platform it's on.
This is at-home. This is an at-home, you know, middle of the day, or, you know, it's a lazy Saturday or something, whatever type of day.
I have gotten very picky with the movies now that I choose to see in theaters.
Yes.
It sounds crazy, but I need something blockbuster.
Yep.
And I will then pay the ticket to go see
it. Two movies, what movies made $1 billion this year? And they have some of my money at the box office. You know,
was
one
it
was top,
Avatar and
Avatar
Top Gun?
Avatar and Top Gun. Yeah. Those are the two that I think those are the only two I saw in the theater.
Yeah, it's like the...
Might have saw another
I'm
one.
I'm not a fan of M. Night Shyamalan movies, but they get a little intriguing. But I might see that new one if it pops up on one of my accounts that I have.
Of course.
Right,
yeah,
let's
no,
just
I'll
see
watch
what this
it
is
then.
About. Yeah, let me see if he's got something good here. Because I don't really like his movies. But
I need explosions.
I need something big.
Space or something flying around. I need big action. Yeah,
That's right. So this movie is something I'm intrigued with, but definitely watching at home.
No, because it's just a lot of talking.
Yeah, that's it.
I mean, what's the action?
And we know how it ends.
Yeah.
$1 billion. What's the bad of the day?
The bad of the day. This is something you need to tell your son, Tony.
Yes?
Because Florida lawmakers are proposing a law that would make storming the field a misdemeanor crime.
Whoa! How are you going to enforce that?
I don't know how you're going to enforce it, but if you are one of the people who are caught, say, you know, you storm the field and, you know, game-winning thing like Florida State last year, where Florida State kids stormed the field. Any of those kids who got pinched by the cops, it would be it's punishable by a year up to year in jail and a $2,500 fine.
$2,500?
Up to $2,500.
Holy cow.
So, yeah.
Good
let
luck
your,
with that.
Let your son know, don't storm the castle.
Good luck basically. With that. Yeah, I better tell him.
Stupid.
That's, like, imagine if number one Tennessee's coming to Gainesville.
Yep.
And they upset the number one team in the country.
You're stay in your seat.
You are going to let... They've done everything. They've had horseback cops and they can't stop it. I mean, they did everything. You get really hard to do.
Because basically what they're saying is that's a covered area in a stadium. Covered in quotation marks.
Yeah.
Said this area is defined as an area designated for use by players, coaches, officials, performers, or personnel administering a covered event that is on or adjacent to... the area of performance to play. So you can't enter that area.
Listen, I am all for the enthusiasm, but I have said somebody's going to get really hurt one day, and it's going to really...
Well, you see it all the time, right? You see, like, you know, Alabama player, I remember running off the field. Or no, it was the security guard for Nick Saban, right?
Right,
just
right.
leveled a college girl.
That's right, yeah.
You know, just leveled her.
But you could get trampled. I mean, you could get... hurt
die.
And nobody can come get you. Like there's, and here's the other thing. Look, I know NFL fans, NFL crowds are not college crowds because it's not filled with 18-year-old kids, 19-year-old kids. But we don't do it in the NFL. Like we don't let Eagle fans did not storm the field when they won the NFC Championship games, and Kansas City fans stayed in their seats when they beat the Bengals. There's a way to do it, but I think that there is something about it that is exciting. It adds to the flavor of the collegiate athletic experience that really these kind of laws are there, but people really they love it when it happens. They publicly
there's a,
say
there's a tradition to it in college
there
sports.
There is.
We know again, not to do it in professional sports.
You're talking about these schools that have 30,000 young people that are all getting into the game for $10 or whatever their student fees are. So they're all there and they're all energetic and excited and they have that youthful energy. I mean, who's sitting in the bottom row of a stadium in Arrowhead, right?
Rich
right. people. That's basically it. And you're talking about a bunch of 18, 19-year-old frat kids that are sitting on the edge going, I'll just run down. It's no big deal. I can do it. When Tennessee beat Alabama, I know three people that were on that field.
Of course you did.
Right? I mean, three of my friends' kids that go to school there all told me this Christmas that they were on the field. Maybe they were, maybe they weren't, but I believe them. Yeah.
Yeah, why wouldn't you believe them?
Why wouldn't I believe them? It looked like it was 30,000 people swarming Neyland Stadium when they beat Alabama. So, yeah, all right, we'll see how that goes. Do we have time for the dumb of the day?
Yeah, it's a quick dumb. No, we got a quick dumb, unless you want to carry it over, but I'll let you know what it is real quick. The dumb of the day is McDonald's has also gotten into the AI game.
Oh, did they?
By having AI take your order at the drive-thru.
Is anybody going to work at McDonald's in
10 years? No, pretty soon, no. But fortunately, you still will need a human because the AI at McDonald's has proved to be faulty.
Oh,
as
gotcha.
Many TikTokers have pointed out, showing when AI is taking their order, like one girl ordered a drink and some fries, and she was charged $250 because the AI decided to fill the rest of the order in with chicken nuggets.
Wow.
Like 19 different orders.
That's crazy. That's crazy. Yeah, it's
so
like,
there's still flaws. Maybe AI feels it's too good for McDonald's drive-thru.
Is it gonna recognize people when they go through a bunch of times? Like, hi, Steve. Are you here for your daily Big Mac? And by the way, why did I just give him a 1980s computer voice?
Because it's retro.
Yeah, exactly.
No, McDonald's is a retro place, right?
Like my GPS, like it doesn't go turn left at the stop sign. It goes turn left at the stop sign.
And you can get different voices too.
Right, you can get different voices. They had a GPS that had Kit's voice from Knight Rider. I wanted that so badly.
I mean, I would think AI at a drive-thru would be helpful because, you know, the lady in the speaker never gets it.
Oh, yeah, exactly.
Is this sure, that doesn't ever work.
Yeah, no. Now you, yeah, that's right.
But
that's
AI.
Why, that's why I always have to check the screen.
Yeah, of course.
In. No. I didn't order 2 McMuffins. No, I didn't order that. Oh, sorry. All right, that's the good, the bad, and the dumb on a Throwback Thursday as we continue the wake-up call.
Wake Up Call with Tony D and Ron Culver continues now on the Sports Map Radio Network. Here's Tony D and Ron Culver.
It is a Throwback Thursday, 1997. On this date, Jeff Gordon won the Daytona 500. Young Jeff Gordon, 25, youngest winner of the Daytona 500 back then. I think he would go on to win it 4 times in his illustrious career. Multiple NASCAR champion. So the Daytona 500 will be this weekend. Our good friend Jeff Hammond from Fox Sports is going to join us tomorrow to talk about the Great American Race. The Daytona 500 is a very interesting race. The only race on the NASCAR calendar that does this. So last night they had pole qualifying. Now, pole qualifying, I hate to say this, is so dull. It's the worst part of the weekend when you cover a motorsport, at least for me. I hated it. Just cars going around. And then it was always like within a few tenths of a second. And you're look at that. He's now the leader by 0.2 seconds. Oh boy. And then they'd go around a couple more laps. But you got your running order for the race. And that's kind of how they did it. And then you got the race. And the race is always exciting. But Daytona does it differently. So Daytona had qualifying last night, but there's only 2 spots on the grid. That's it. Everybody was running for just 2 spots on the starting grid. And those are Alex Bowman and Kyle Larson are the 2 drivers that are going to be on the front row of the Daytona 500. That was the only thing that was determined last night. The rest of the running order is going to be determined tonight. They're going to have 2 races, 2 dual races. Each are going to be 150 miles or 60 laps around the Daytona Speedway. And then how those cars finish will determine the rest of the lineup behind those two cars for Sunday's race. It's always exciting because you're actually getting racing to determine the running order. So it's kind of wild because if you are in a, you know, you put these drivers in these interesting situations, right? Where they go, okay, do I race hard to try to move up some spots on the grid for the start of the race? Or do I sort of play it safe, keep my car intact? I don't have to keep my mechanics open, you know, up all night. I like where I'm at. You can win the Daytona 500 from pretty much anywhere based on drafting and strategy. I don't need to go for the gap. But there's that old saying, as Ayrton Senna once said, if there's a gap and you don't go for it, you're not a race car driver, right? And so that's the sort of dilemma that these drivers are in, is like, how aggressive are you going to be in a 60-lap race to just determine where you start for the big race on Sunday? And so that's what you're getting tonight from Daytona. So we're celebrating Jeff Gordon and winning the 1997 Daytona 500. I saw Full Swing last night, a couple of episodes of the new golf documentary on Netflix, which was really fascinating. I am 4 episodes in. So I started watching that like late afternoon and got a couple of episodes in. And then I kind of watched it late last night as I was wrapping up some stuff. Really good. It's one of these inside the ropes or inside kind of documentaries like Hard Knocks is for the NFL, yeah. Drive to Survive for Formula One, where they take a season, they find a few people to mic up and camera up, and then they turn it into what they turn it into. So in this case, they've lucked out because this season had the LIV Golf controversy, and that sort of played itself out. But they followed Justin Thomas and Jordan Spieth, Dustin Johnson's predominant, Matt Fitzpatrick, who won the U.S. Open, and Brooks Koepka. Koepka steals the show, man. Koepka steals
Does
the
he?
Show. Yeah, at least the first couple of episodes.
Was he even in the tour?
Yeah, so, yeah, here's the thing.
I mean, didn't he, like, take some time off because he got married?
Well, yeah, so here's Brooks Koepka's 2022 season. So, as you know, he starts off on the PGA Tour. And he ends up on the LIV Tour. So in the first part of so they're trying to do this thing where, so they've got to follow somebody and then they follow them at a particular tournament or they follow them at a particular event. So obviously they can't predict, you know, who they're winning. So they're kind of doing this where Justin Thomas wins the PGA. They're following Justin Thomas, but they don't know if he's going to win the PGA. They just have film on everybody, and then they put this nice package together as you watch his family watch him win the PGA. Koepka was interesting because they're tagging him at a time where he's struggling to play golf. I kid you not when I tell you this. He's at a point where he's obsessed with his golf game. Okay, now he used to be a guy that said, I was always able to separate my life from the job. So if I played bad, I could go home and forget about it. And I could just do other things and just be involved in my life and enjoy my, you know, my life and then get back to work, you know, go back to the club, work on the game. But he's now obsessed because he's watching Scottie Scheffler, who won at Bay Hill, Phoenix, the Austin match play, and then the Masters. And he's watching Scottie Scheffler dominate like he had dominated. And he can't play. He's missing the cut. He missed the cut at the Masters. But his girlfriend, now wife, Jenna Sims, is a very attractive young lady. They met. She said something. She doesn't come off very well in this because she just kind of comes out and says she slid into his DMs and now they're getting married. And you know how it's like, oh, you didn't meet when he was like a broke, struggling golfer and you built a life together. But she's very attractive. So there's one scene they shoot. He lives in Jupiter, Florida, and he's got this magnificent house on the water with a dock with a boat on it. But he's got one of those infinity pools. And then he's got like this embedded couch lounge area by the pool. And he's laying there and you can just tell he's just bothered. And his bikini-clad fiance just comes down, and he doesn't pay attention to her because he's so focused on his golf. The only thing he cares about is his golf games in the toilet, and he can't play. And he's just saying, I can't stop thinking about it. He just obsessed. Meanwhile, Scottie Scheffler is on cloud nine. He's like, him and his wife are out getting Starbucks, and he's just like thrilled, and his game is going great. But it gives you like this inside look into them preparing for golf. And by the way, we've said it many times, Ron, being a professional golfer is a great life.
Yeah.
At the highest level, it's a great life, man. They're showing these guys like Jordan. They show Jordan Spieth, and he's just like goes to the airport. He gets on this private jet. Him and Justin Thomas are on it, and they're flying. They fly to the tournament. They get picked up on the tarmac. It's nuts, man. It's a nutty life, man.
They didn't have to sit at the carousel hoping that their clubs made it.
Exactly. And they show them at their home course, you know, where they're just, you know, they wake up. They're like, I think I'll work on chipping and putting today. And they go to their home course. Nobody's there. It's an uber private club. They just chipping and hitting balls all day. But the best story so far is Joel Damon. He's not familiar with him. Yeah, a lot of people aren't. And I think this changes a lot for people. I think this changes him for a lot of people. So Joel Damon grew up as obviously a very good golfer. I think he grew up in Idaho, they said. And he was the best golfer at a very young age. Like, he was in tournaments and he was winning the state title and high school golfer of the year and all that stuff. But he had a friend, and his friend was a golfer too. But he's like, I was a good golfer, but Joel was the best golfer in the state. And we became best friends. And when Joel went to the Corn Ferry Tour and qualifying and went on the tour, he was his caddy. So his best friend is his caddy. And you really got to watch this relationship. It's phenomenal. It's absolutely phenomenal. He's allowed to talk to Joel because they're childhood best friends in a way no caddy would ever talk to their player boss. Like, literally, there's one moment where they're playing in the match play and he's struggling, and the caddy makes a joke, you could fake an injury and we can get out of this thing. And he literally is saying to Joel Damon, I think there's a 3 o'clock flight we can get if we get out of this right now. They go to qualifying for the U.S. Open. He doesn't make the U.S. Open field. He's not in the top 60. So they have to go to the sectional qualifying. They're struggling. They play 36 holes. They're struggling early. And he says to Joel, he goes, do you even want to go to the U.S. Open this year? And he goes, nah. He goes, I don't either. But they turn it around. He gets to Brookline, and he has one of his best finishes in a major. And when they're serious, they work great together, but it's the goofiness of the relationship, the lighthearted relationship that works. It's a really good angle. So Full Swing is on Netflix if you're interested in the behind-the-scenes look at golfers on the PGA Tour. It's really well done.
You're listening to Wake Up Call on the SportsMap Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
Coming up next hour, Shelby Mast is going to join us, bracketwag.com. We'll talk some NCAA basketball. Yeah, don't blink, guys. It's coming to an end, the regular season. I know, it's a couple weeks. I know. They'll get the conference tournament play, then Selection Sunday. It'll be here in a blink of an eye, trust me. You may not think so. Pay attention. Alabama lost last night. They fell to Tennessee. Pretty good. There's a good game tonight. Purdue is on the road at Maryland. That could be a real problem for the Boilermakers. They've got Zach Eddy, who's the big 7'4 center, and they lost on Sunday to Northwestern. They've got a couple of other good games tonight, too, as well. But on Twitter, at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver, that's Ron with two N's. Back to Full Swing for a second. The production company that did this, did Drive to Survive, I wonder if they're really interested in really doing things like this for other sports. I think there's a tennis one, but I'm not sure. I think I saw, it might not be the same production company, but I think I saw one that's like for tennis, kind of an inside what it's like behind the glass, if you will, of tennis. But these tend to work in a way that gives you a humanized version of Hard Knocks pulls this all the time. Hard Knocks pulls it where they could do a documentary on what happens, but they want to give you backgrounds of certain people to pay attention to. They want you to talk. They want to talk about growing up. They want to give you a little background to these people. They want to humanize it. And then they want to give you the drama of it. The thing with golf is, what was lacking, you were asking me earlier if it's the same as Drive to Survive, and it's built in the same way. They pick a person for an episode. They follow that guy for the episode. You get behind the scenes of the driver talking to the team and what's going on the track. And then in golf, it's the same way. They follow a guy. They follow him shot, you know, while he's participating in a tournament. Maybe he wins a tournament. Maybe he plays well. Then you get the shot of him kissing his wife afterwards and talking to his agent and going to the car afterwards. But I think the difference is you lack a little bit of the drama because golfers are independent contractors. So they're not conflicting with some authority, right? Like in, Hard Knocks, you can have a coach not be happy with a player and a player not be happy with a coach. You can have an argument between teams. You can have a offensive coach and a defensive coach yell at each other. In Drive to Survive, you can have the team, the team yelling at the driver and the driver yelling back at the team. You can have conflicts on track where the drivers want to meet up afterwards and fight because they tangled up. You lose a little bit of that with this because it's not the same. It's not the same environment. What you have is a guy being upset at himself because he's the CEO, general manager, and top dog of his own business, his business being himself. So he's not angry at somebody in authority that made a decision for him that cost him a race or a match or something along those lines. He's looking at himself. So you get a little bit of that. You lose a lot of that when it comes to these in-depth documentaries. But overall, really good stuff. Really, you get to know a little bit about these people. Matt Fitzpatrick, who won the U.S. Open, I didn't know this about him. He writes down every one of his shots. And I'm like, when do you have time to do that? He writes down what he hit, how far he hit it. Like, who has time to figure that stuff out in the middle of a round? Like, wouldn't you just be happy with, I hit 6 iron to 3 feet from the hole? I don't know. Man, it was great. But no, that's what he does. He measures all of his holes, and he's, like, really into data. He's got a big, like, Excel sheet, different sheets, measuring off everything, measuring all his over the years. He's gotten stronger at this club, stronger at that club, everything. So he's very meticulous. Ian Poulter had 4 kids and had no bones about saying LIV golf was about money. He's like, well, this is what I do for a living. I play golf, and I get paid to do it. I'm a personality. I got a good social media following. I play golf for money. And somebody wants to pay me a lot of money, I'm going to go play golf for them, and no bones about it. Which I think what you and I said last year was, if you're just going to do this, you're just better off saying that, right? Like, instead of saying, well, I just think that they're on to something better, and I think they're revolutionary in how golf will be perceived by people. There's going to be music, and there's going to be a team format, which I'm behind. It was better if you just said, you know what? They're paying me $200 million to be part of this thing. I think I'm going to be part of this thing. You're better off doing that. But they've been teasing sort of a big episode of a LIV Golf breakdown. I don't know if it's coming, but they've been teasing it. But they put little snippets of the LIV Golf in the documentary. So it's actually quite really good, really good. I highly recommend it. Check it out. I wish they could have a little Tiger Woods in there. They didn't have access to Tiger Woods. That would have been kind of interesting.
Yeah, but then it becomes less about golf and more about Tiger, probably. About
Tiger. Yeah, Tiger playing in the Genesis Open, Genesis Invitational today at Riviera Golf Club. You know, Tiger Woods used to play in this thing when he was a teenager. I didn't realize he never won the LA. What he's called the LA Open. That's kind of its old name.
But isn't this his tournament though?
Yeah, it is his tournament. He's hosting that.
Yeah,
yeah. That's his. You know, but when he was 16. In the early 90s. And I remember it being a big deal because Eldrick Woods from the That's Incredible show is playing on the PGA Tour as a 16-year-old. Sports Illustrated did a whole thing on it. But he's never won there. He's never captured the title of that event. Again, it used to be the LA Open at the historic Riviera Country Club. But yeah, it's his tournament, so he's obviously in the field for it. But it's his first competitive round of golf since July of last year. They did showcase the Masters, and they did have clips, general clips, of Tiger talking to the press at Augusta last year when he was returning from the car accident, and everybody wondering, could he walk, could he play, and showing, you know, some of his shots and some of his ability at Augusta. But they didn't really dive fully into it, and they didn't get him on camera talking about anything. But other than that, it was really good. I like documentaries. I like documentaries that are well done. That's why I'm a big fan of the 30 for 30s. I like big picture stories. These aren't that, though. These are more, they're really cut in an entertaining way. They're not really trying to dive deep into something. They're not trying to dig deep into an issue or try to solve something or try to give you a complete story of something that maybe was brushed over at the time. But it does its job in that it promotes the people that are involved in the sport. It humanizes the people. Drive to Survive, I think one of the why that was a success was people were watching it during the pandemic. They didn't know Formula One existed. It looked dangerous. They sort of cut the promo as an extremely dangerous sport. Drivers were in these massive crashes, and drivers were talking about taking their life into their own hands. Daniel Ricciardo's mother is in the promo saying she prays for before every race. So there's like an element of danger. So people are like, I wonder what this is. But when they watched it, they saw some of the personalities. They saw some of the conflict. They saw the pressure. They saw the elements of the sport. And they went, I'm in. I think I could be a fan of this. I think I could watch this. In a lot of ways, I wonder if that does that to golf. Does somebody who's like, man, I just kind of watch the majors, maybe if that, but maybe I don't even watch golf at all. Do they watch this and go, man, that looks a little bit more interesting than I thought it was? You know, golf is boring on TV, but they've made it look a lot more exciting. They did a great job showcasing the 16th at Phoenix because they talked about that tournament and they talked about that atmosphere. And they did a really good job with that. There was a whole Scottie Scheffler winning the Waste Management Open last year, and they did a whole thing on that. So if you are not familiar with that, you could watch it and say, well, maybe golf is a lot more exciting than I thought. Because the one shot that they had, which doesn't get a lot of play, but I think really should get more play, is not the crowd at 16. It's the crowd outside the gates before they open to get to 16. At 4 o'clock in the morning, how they're all lined up in the parking lots ready for the race to get a seat on that hole for that particular day. They did a really good job of that, showcasing everybody as the dawn is just starting to peak and you're getting just a little bit of sunlight. They open the gates and everybody's just running to get to that hole so they can land there. They talked about the golfers who took off their shirts, and I mean, it was more exciting. And if you're not familiar with that, they did a pretty good job of that. All right, on Twitter, at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver, that's Ron with two N's. We're going to talk college basketball with Shelby Mast coming up in the next hour. We'll also get back into the NFL with some of the quarterback maneuverings. Not been settled yet, but it does give you an eye-opening look as to some teams that are going to be in the market for Derek Carr and in the market for Aaron Rodgers. If Aaron Rodgers emerges like the groundhog and says, I want to play somewhere else, it would be really great if you could send me somewhere else. If you're a team, how aggressive would you be on a Derek Carr, or do you sit back and wait to see if you could be in the running for Aaron Rodgers, or you could be in the running for someone else? We'll talk about that coming up at hour number three as well. But Shelby Mast is also going to join us. It's college basketball is heating up. Some big games on tap. If you're still interested in how the conferences are looking for the NCAA tournament, he's one of the best in the business at anticipating where teams are going as of right now. It's Tony D. Ron Culver. It's Wake Up Call.